Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you discover you're pregnant, it's the most incredible news. And while this is a time filled with absolute joy, for many it can also be extremely nerve-wracking. For expectant mothers, there's an information overload, and actually finding out where to start and how to prepare can seem so overwhelming. And that's why I want to introduce you to the Peanut app, which is a great way to explore the truths about giving birth and getting ready for the due date. Peanut introduces you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in life. So whether it's pregnancy, first years, nursery, or beyond, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. So if you're looking to meet other women at a similar stage in life, then download the Peanut app for free today on your app store or head to peanut.app.link/foodforthought. Hello and welcome to Food for Thought on Motherhood, a special mini-series on all things pregnancy, childbirth and baby. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In this special mini-series, I'm joined by leading health professionals so that together we can all learn fact from fiction and support your journey, whether that's through conception, pregnancy, or just like me as a brand new mum. Deciding on the best childbirth option for you is such a personal decision, and wherever you choose, the place should feel right for you. This Food for Thought on Motherhood sees midwife Marie-Louise and I explore where best to welcome your new baby into the world. Hello, Marie.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm really well, thank you. But more to the point, you are a brand new mummy. How old is she now?
She is 3 weeks old and 4 days, so very newborn.
Oh, so precious. Thank you for spending some time with us today, because I know how difficult that can be. I think, so we've done my podcast previously on my birth story, and now we're going to help our listeners discussing the options that are out there for them. So there are loads now, aren't there? What would you say is the most common?
Yeah, exactly. There are lots of different options, which is brilliant for women, because I'm a massive advocate of always knowing what's available to you. So at the moment, we have home birth. We have a midwifery-led unit or a birth centre that's a standalone unit. So that means that it's not connected to an obstetrics unit or a hospital. And then you have a birth centre or midwifery-led unit that is attached to a obstetrics unit. And then, of course, you've got the obstetrics unit itself, and that's commonly referred to as delivery suite or as labour ward. And then actually one thing that I didn't mention, which is always a choice, is free birth as well. So birthing wherever you fancy.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Women, I mean, it's obviously not recommended, but women do it sometimes. They choose to birth where they want to and without any medical assistance.
Where would that be? Like, what's an example? Like, not just in your home, like somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, it depends where they live. So, for example, some families that are perhaps travelling around or living in mobile units, for example, they will end up birthing wherever they feel like it, if that's their choice. So, you know, they might be staying in a particular area and they decide to free birth there and then move along to another area on their journey or travels. So, but mostly free birthing is associated with no medical support. So you don't have a midwife or a doctor or anybody with you. Sometimes they'll have a doula with them. Mm. But, and of course it isn't, you know, we don't recommend that, but it's still a choice. And as I said, women do choose to free birth.
So interesting. I'm assuming that some of these options obviously carry more risks than others do.
Yes, and I think it depends entirely on the woman herself and her baby. So in terms of when we're talking about risk, it really depends on your pregnancy. So for example, if you do have other medical conditions or you have any conditions that are in relation to the pregnancy, such as pregnancy-induced hypertension, where your blood pressure can go up during pregnancy, that's quite common now, and it's becoming more and more common, or diabetes, or perhaps there's extra fluid around the baby. You know, there's different things that can happen during pregnancy and pre-pregnancy that increase a woman's risks. So then it would be advised that she has her baby on an obstetrics-led unit. However, women that are considered to be low risk and they don't have any health complications outside of pregnancy, and everything during the pregnancy has been completely normal and within what we would expect it, all of those like blood pressure readings, the measurements of mum's tummy, the scans, all of these different tests that we offer women, if they've all shown that everything is lovely and normal, then actually the safest place for women to give birth is at home or in a birth centre.
Yes, of course. I'm in awe of the fact that you are so coherent and you're 3 weeks in. It's extremely impressive, by the way, Maria.
I don't feel like it. I mean, I've not slept for 3 weeks, I can assure you. But
I remember that. But, well, I'm still in the sleep's a bit better now. But anyway, I digress. So choosing the birthing method for some people, I mean, obviously it's a huge relief and I'm that type of person that loved a plan. But how can we prepare our body for the birth? What's the main thing? Is it keeping the pelvis raised or being on all fours? Is there something that we should be doing?
Yeah, so during pregnancy, we tend to, our current modern lifestyle and living, we do tend to do a lot of sitting, and especially as it recently, of course, we've had the global pandemic, coronavirus, and lots of people have been working from home. And that generally means sitting. And we tend to tilt our pelvises a little bit forward when we sit. And that can encourage the baby to be in something called an OP position, occiput posterior. And that simply means that the baby is back to back. So the posterior part, as in the back part of the occiput, which is the back of the baby's head, is facing upwards. So essentially, the baby is looking out towards mum's tummy. And it doesn't mean the majority of babies will turn during labour. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to have a more painful or a longer labour, because they can turn quite quickly. But that position is sometimes associated with those things, with a longer labour. And women in particular report more back pain. So the best position for a baby to be in is occiput anterior. And that brings me back to when you are sitting and your pelvis is tilted slightly forward, meaning really that your knees are a little bit higher than your pelvis, that encourages the back-to-back position. So what we want to do is we want to open the pelvis. We want to give baby as much room and as much space as possible to get into that optimal position, whereby the baby is looking towards mum's spine. And that's called occiput anterior. Oh, so it's the direct opposite of that. they are all a little bit confusing. But the easiest way to think of it is back to back. That's the position that we'd like to try and avoid. And ideally, we want the baby's spine to be towards mummy's tummy, so her belly button.
Yeah, and of course, obviously, to let women know, you can do all you can to try and get your baby into this optimal position. But of course, nature will take its course, won't it? And a lot of the time, you know, what will be sometimes will be. But why not do all of that to try and enhance your chance anyway? I remember sitting on a Swiss ball for pretty much my entire pregnancy.
Me too, I did the same.
Exactly. I've still got it now, you know. It's up in my nursery room and I just love sitting on it sometimes. And in the early days, it would really calm Zachary down in the first few weeks, actually.
Yeah. And they're used to that motion, I think, when you've spent a lot of time on your birthing ball. They do really like it. I've been sitting on mine postnatally as well. And I've actually found that it's really supported my lower back and my pelvis as well. So I think, you know, for women that are listening to this during their pregnancy, it has got its uses postnatally as well.
Yeah, it's not something you just deflate. I mean, it's been the best thing ever for me, for sure. And having a birth plan. Now, I found this at the time when I was pregnant, it was so helpful having a birth plan. But obviously, when it came to the birth, for me, I wish I kind of was a bit more free with it. What would be your advice on that?
Yeah, so I really encourage women to have a birth plan, and it's not so that you have a plan that you really need to stick to and are under the impression that if the you don't have the birth that you plan to have, then something really bad has happened and you have a negative experience. Because I think when you go into birth with that mindset of I want this particular birth, and if I don't get this birth, then I would have had a negative experience, you're then at more of a risk of having a negative experience. But the purpose of a birth plan for me and the way in which that I explain this to the ladies that I look after is it's to understand and know your options. So, for example, I say to women, have a plan A, B and C. Understand what happens during a cesarean section. Know the difference between the categories of cesarean sections, for example. Know who you want to be in with you. So you can only have one person in with you when you have a C-section. And if you've got two birth partners, then who do you want to come with you? Is there a particular music that you would like playing? Because all of these conversations enable women to really think through the possibilities of what else might happen and what they would like. Because just like in life, there are no guarantees. And it really doesn't matter how much planning you do surrounding something. Sometimes things don't go according to plan. And in particular with birth, there's so many different variables that affect the birth as well. And some of them we can control, but some of them we can't control. So part of a birth plan is accepting from the get-go when you're writing it, this may not go according to plan. And here are my other options to really enhance my experience. And, you know, I always say to women, skin to skin, always put skin to skin. There are certain things in your birth plan that should ideally remain the same no matter what. So skin to skin is a great one. Making sure that you've got the right support is another one. Again, music can make such a difference. And it doesn't matter what scenario you find yourself in, all of those things generally are still available to you.
Yeah, no, that's really, really good advice. 100%. I think knowing that you have choices is invaluable, and that you can do what you can. And I remember taking things into the hospital room with me that helped at the time as well, because I had started, and I actually found it, again, invaluable during pregnancy. I learned a lot. It even helped with my bowel movements, was getting a birthing.
Yes.
Do you want to go and explain to our listeners what this is and how it could be beneficial, perhaps?
Yeah, so I'm a massive fan of hypnobirthing, and I'm actually a qualified hypnobirthing teacher myself. It isn't for everyone, and some people say, oh no, hypnobirthing, that's really not for me. I don't like the sound of that. But I do encourage as many women as possible to just give it a try. So basically, it is a set of mind management tools or practices that you can use on a daily basis. And simply speaking, our thoughts affect how we feel inside, and they actually affect our hormonal composition. And that we are really interested in during birth, because in order for your birth to progress as it's meant to, you need to have the right hormonal cocktail or composition, as we refer to it as. And that means that you want your oxytocin to be really flowing, because that's the main hormone that's responsible for those contractions and for labor to continue on. And then you've also got your endorphins, which are your natural pain relievers as well. Now, I'm sure that lots of people are aware, when you feel anxious or worried, then you release a different set of hormones. And generally, that's the fight or flight hormones, and adrenaline is set off then. And that can inhibit the flow of oxytocin. So very simply speaking, don't want to go into a biology lesson about all of the different hormones. You don't really need to know that. But what you need to know specifically about hypnobirthing is that it can really help to enhance the flow of hormones that you want to encourage throughout your labor and even after birth. So oxytocin is the love hormone, and we release it when we feel calm, comfortable and relaxed. So you want that to continue on in your postnatal journey as well. So skin to skin, once again, contact also releases oxytocin. So you want to make sure that your brain is in the right state of mind in order for your body to give it, to have it the best chance possible to perform at its best, because it will do all of these things naturally for you. And part of hypnobirthing as well is letting go of that neocortex, so that really human and logical thinking part of the brain, the one that's not been working all that great for me after my lack of sleep. But we want the primal brain to really take over. And I simply explain this to women is sex. So when you're having sex, you don't want your neocortex to be off thinking about what you're having for dinner or whether or not you've done the washing or whatever. You want to be completely relaxed, and you want your primal brain to really take over and in order for you to have really good sex. And it's exactly the same during birth. You don't want to be thinking and contemplating all of these things because your body's not going to perform at its best. And hypnobirthing helps you to let go of that neocortex part of the brain, engage more with the primal part of the brain, and allow the body to take over, flow, and perform at its best.
Oh, completely. And if there's one thing, I know hindsight's a beautiful thing, but I had done all the hypnobirthing and I loved it and I was so invested in it, but yeah, I didn't apply it very well in the hospital-based scenario that I ended up in and the situation that happened to me, which I won't go into on this episode because I've got a whole other podcast with Marie on my birth story on the main Food for Thought series. But if anyone's listening, if you're interested in what Marie has just said, please do try and envisage it in a multitude of scenarios, because think that's probably beneficial, because there are so many different stages of labor. I mean, I thought it took me a few days, but I know Marie, you had a very different experience. So what are these different stages of it that women can expect to go through?
Yeah. So in midwifery and obstetrics, we refer to three stages of labor, but in reality, there are a few more stages of labor that we often talk about. So I talk about there's five different stages of labor, and that's early labor or latent phase of labor. Then we have established labor. Then we have the transition phase, when you're about to have your baby. So when your cervix is fully dilated, and there's like a little bit of a pause sometimes, and your contractions can actually die off a little bit, but they do come back for the next stage, which is the pushing stage, where you actually meet your baby. And then the fifth stage is the delivery of the placenta. So as originally mentioned, in maternity, we refer to three stages, but I don't actually think that that's helpful for women to think about or know about, because the stages are far too long and kind of lumped together. I think it's far better to break it down into those five stages that I've just explained, rather than the medical terms that we use in maternity. Because as you know, when you start laboring, that early and latent phase of labor, it's really beneficial for women to understand that this time can take quite a while. And if you think, oh, I'm in the first stage of labor here, then you kind of are under the impression that you've gone into labor. But really, in the latent phase of labor, you aren't in established labor, which is the next phase, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. It does. And I think it's all very well speaking about it, isn't it? But when you go through it and you're getting contractions and you're trying to visually think about where you're at, perhaps the most helpful thing, instead of worrying actually maybe about the stages or the dilation, but then again, every woman wants to know how dilated they are. I mean, how can you not want to know that sort of information? Because it's almost motivating, isn't it?
It is. And I must admit, when I had my home birth recently, I really wanted to know what my cervix was doing, and I really wanted to know how dilated I am. And
a midwife and, giving birth, I would love to be a fly on the wall.
Oh, it was interesting because I was such a midwife in my own birth, but but anyway, that's a side note. But I can completely understand, is what I'm saying, that women do really focus on how far dilated they are, but actually that can change very, very quickly. And it did for me as well. So, you know, you can go from being 2 centimeters to 8 centimeters very quickly. You can be at 7 centimeters for a very long time, or you can even be 9 centimeters or with what we call an anterior lip, which just means there's like a little bit of the cervix that still hasn't quite gone back behind the baby's head and allowed for that full dilatation. So you can have an anterior lip for an hour or two. And, you know, you might be thinking, oh, right, I'm nearly ready to push my baby out now. But actually, you've still got a little bit of cervix left. So what I'm saying is really try not to focus on how far dilated your cervix is, and try to go within. And going back just a little bit about hypnobirthing, that's what hypnobirthing can really do, is it can enable you to go into your body through that deep breathing and that deep relaxation. So that's why it can be really helpful for all births as well. But yes,
can I ask a question on that? The cervix, you know, you said if it's not tilted, I wonder, because I had a forceps delivery in the end, but would somebody have to, if that was the way it was headed and the cervix still wasn't in the position it's meant to be in, would they still be able to do a forceps delivery if the cervix hadn't moved?
So they will try to, if it's safe, they can try to push the cervix back out of the way in order to perform the forceps. But if the cervix is really starting to swell and there's concerns over what's happening with the cervix and the reason that that's happening, then they may not be able to have a vaginal birth, because it might not be safe and it can cause trauma to the cervix as well. And that can, of course, cause bleeding. So it really depends on the situation and the consistency of the cervix. If it's just thin, then sometimes it can be manoeuvred back, or we just need to give it a little bit more time. Or if the contractions have died off a bit, then perhaps it will be recommended that there's a little bit of Syntocin on, which is a hormone drip that's administered, and that can help to bring the contractions back, which will in turn move the anterior lip. So it depends exactly what's happening to the cervix. But as I said, if it's displaying signs of swelling and it's not very happy, then ideally we'd like to avoid interfering with our fingers and kind of pushing it too much.
Of course. And that's called induction, isn't it? Being induced when you're put on the drip?
Well, that's right. And again, it depends on the clinical situation. So if you're already in labour, it's referred to augmentation because it's continuing to bring the labour on. If we are starting the labour completely artificially, then that's called an induction of labour. So meaning that your body is not showing any signs of you being in labour already, then that would be an induction, yeah.
Yeah, no, there's, and I think that's probably a lot of people listening are probably thinking, well, where does pain relief come into this as well? Let's talk about epidurals. And I remember on the hypnobirthing course, it had really, I've got to be very honest, I think it had put in my head that epidurals were bad. And I was like one of the last things I wanted. And I can see the reasons for and against, but perhaps for our listeners, you could go into a little bit why it's not bad, but people may choose to have it or go without it.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I think sometimes epidurals are given a bad rap. And I think it's for two reasons mainly. One of them being, and I really don't know why this is, because it's absolutely not true, but sometimes people think that they have failed if they have an epidural, and that's a reflection of them and their ability, which couldn't be further from the truth. And the second reason is when epidurals first came about, there was a much greater risk of paralysis, so meaning that the procedure could cause mum to become paralysed. Now, the procedure is very, very safe nowadays, and that is extremely rare. I mean, I've been in midwifery for over a decade and I have never seen it. The worst thing that I've seen from an epidural is a really bad headache postnatally. Mm. That's the very worst thing that I have seen. And that's not to say that that the other risks that are associated with an epidural don't happen. I'm just trying to illustrate, actually, generally, how safe the procedure is. And you may need to have an epidural if you've been in latent phase of labor for days, which sometimes happens. So that's that early stage of labor that we spoke about before. And that is when your cervix is less than 4 centimeters dilated. We consider you to be in latent phase. Now, unfortunately, some women with their first babies are in latent phase for days and it becomes exhausting. Then they go into established labor or active labor, and they are completely exhausted. Their energy levels have been completely depleted. They'll end up perhaps having low blood sugar because they've not been eating and drinking as much as they have needed to be. Then perhaps the baby also becomes a little bit dehydrated and the heart rate can go up. And anyway, it can cause sometimes a cascade of things. Now, yeah. An epidural in a circumstance like that can be really helpful for a mum because it can help to relieve her discomfort, which is, you know, massively beneficial when you've been in labor for 3 days. And it can enable mum to get some much needed rest. Now, you and I both know what it's like having a newborn and how full on it is. So if you've been in labor for 3 days and then you've gone on to have an even longer labor whereby you've then needed to push baby out, or perhaps you've needed to have a forceps birth, and then you've had a little bit of a bleed after birth, and then you've gone into the postnatal period completely exhausted, and this should be, you know, such a beautiful and wonderful time in your life where you're meeting your baby and it's all so exciting, but you are completely exhausted, and that physical exhaustion will really have an impact on how you feel as a new mum. So an epidural can be so helpful in that circumstance, because if mum gets a couple of hours rest, then she's going to feel so much better. She will perhaps push better because she's going to have more energy to push. And when she meets her baby, she's going to be feeling so much better because she's had that rest beforehand.
It makes such a difference. I mean, I developed psychosis afterwards from lack of sleep and rest. And I wonder how bad it would have actually been if I hadn't have been fortunate enough to have the epidural at some stage as well. It could have been worse. So I really, really hope people listening don't judge, be open-minded to what will be. Yeah. And what about water births? Because that's something I know I wanted on my list. It didn't quite happen for me, but I think you had a water birth, didn't you? I think, Marie.
I did. Yeah, I did.
How does that work? What difference? How does it feel? What difference does it make?
Yeah, so once again, I'm a massive fan of water birth, and I did have a beautiful water birth myself. And the reason that I chose to have a water birth, and actually something that I just want to say here actually is that when it comes to birth, you know, I sound very much like, oh yeah, I've had this brilliant, beautiful home water birth. Everything went according to plan for me. Isn't that brilliant?
Don't feel bad. It's inspiring. Women need to hear positive stories, Marie.
Yeah, but they do. And I always say that, do seek positive stories out as well. But I do really want to stress that there is absolutely an element of luck involved with that too. For example, when my waters went, there wasn't any meconium in my waters. As a midwife, I'm thinking, is the Lycor clear? Have we got to go in for meconium stain Lycor? You know, and these things, like my baby was in a good position, but that doesn't mean to say that that's because I did the things that I did that created that. Perhaps it helped, but it doesn't mean to say that if you do all of these things, then you're guaranteed to have this perfect water birth that you've got on your plan. There is definitely an element of luck involved. But anyway, so back to water birth. The things that water birth can do that really help labor is that generally women that do have a water birth have less medication or less need for pain relief. And the other thing is it can also affect the time in labor as well. So there is some research to show that it can reduce the length of labor, and it can also reduce the need for artificial oxytocin, which is what we spoke about before when that comes to induction of labor or augmentation, when you're wanting to bring the labor back on if it started to die off a bit.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Also, right. There are higher rates of normal vaginal birth when women do have water birth, and lower rates of episiotomies and significant tears. So that's sort of third degree and fourth degree tears. Although there is actually some research that I must say that it can increase the risk of small grazes or labial tears. That some research did suggest, but if you kind of contrast that with the fact that it's known to reduce the risk of significant tears, meaning third and fourth degree, then I think you'll agree with me that I'd rather risk a labial tear than not.
Oh yeah.
There's also possibility of lower rates of hemorrhaging after birth, or what we refer to as a postpartum hemorrhage. So there's a whole host of benefits that come with that. But anecdotally, I understand all of the scientific research behind it and the benefits, but something that I saw at water birth was just how peaceful women and their babies are. And when the babies come into the world, they just take a little bit longer to kind of come round and take their first breath. And sometimes that can be alarming for people that aren't pre-warned about this, because they think, oh my God, my baby's not breathing, what's wrong? But actually, it's really normal, because babies have gone from water to water, and it's a lot more of a gentle transition. If you think, when you're born into dry land, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Lots of babies are born on dry land without any problems. But when you think about it, they come immediately into a dry environment, one that's quite bright. It's about 15 degrees cooler. It's a lot louder. Now, when they're born into water, generally the lighting is dim. They can't hear the sounds straight away, or perhaps, you know, other people's voices or beeps or whatever else is going on. And if it's kept at the correct temperature, then they don't have that instant change of temperature either. And that's why they can sometimes take a little minute to come round and to take that first breath, just because they feel really calm. And I did actually have that with my baby. My boyfriend, I told him beforehand, but he said, is the baby okay? Is the baby okay? Because she opened her eyes and she was just looking around. And that's what I've seen so many times in my career. And there's no research to actually support the benefits on the neonate, so for your baby. But anecdotally, as I said, that's what I've seen from my practice over the years. And that's what I experienced firsthand myself.
That's so interesting. It's honest, I find this subject fascinating. It's just mind-blowing. Women's bodies are amazing, the options of birth that we now have, and learning like you just said, because if you didn't know that, you could be quite panicked. There's quite a few things that if you weren't educated about this area, that you'd think, why is this happening? And I think one of the biggest drives for women that they're told about is things like, well, prevent your perineum from tearing, or things to do, rather than thinking about what actually happens once the baby's born that minute as well.
Yes.
But on the subject, I'm waffling, on the subject of the perineum, I think we should definitely explain to listeners things that we can do to help us stretch, because I swear it helps. It really does help.
Yes, it does. And research really does support that as well. So in particular for first-time mums, perineal massage can reduce the risk of significant tears. And so Perineal massage is just simply, it sounds like it's this really nice, relaxing thing. But actually, it's not that it's not nice, but it's not that relaxing. I don't know how you found it. I didn't find it all that relaxing, if I'm honest.
I started it and it is painful. I don't find it relaxing. And then I got an Epino device, which I don't know what you think about that. But for me, I actually found that better than doing the massage myself, because it's more of a device.
Yes, exactly. And some women really love the Epino. One thing that I have to mention on that topic is that with it, there was a case reported, I believe it was in Australia, but I might be wrong there, but there was a case where a woman actually had a second degree tear antenatally during pregnancy from using the Epino because it wasn't used correctly. So just if women are using it, they just need to really, really be careful that they don't overstretch, because your perineum is absolutely designed to stretch, but it can take a little bit of time to build up that elasticity. So and also with the Epino, the perineum is designed to enable a baby's head to fit through. But if you're continuing to use this product really regularly throughout your pregnancy, then there is a perhaps we don't understand so much about yet, because it's a fairly new product, perhaps the long-term effects of that postnatally. So if you are using it regularly, just make sure that postnatally you're really strict with your pelvic floor exercises and making sure that you really tighten those muscles back up again, to ensure that you don't have things like incontinence later on in life. So I think it's just balancing up what works for you personally, how you're using those kinds of devices. But generally speaking, perineal massage and preparing the perineum, if you do want to use a device like the Epino, can help to prepare your body ahead of birth and to prevent tearing as well during birth.
Have to do it so slowly, don't you? Because I remember at the start thinking, oh, I can only get to 4 centimetres, thinking this is never going to happen. And then eventually I very, very slowly, like Marie said, please take all of the information she said very seriously, because that does sound terrifying, that the side effects of it not going right. But I did get it to 10 eventually. It can happen.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And lots, like I say, lots of women do use it and they do really like it and they do feel like it really benefited them. And I think one of the main benefits from doing perineal massage and feeling that kind of burning and stretching sensation if you are using Epino is that familiarization. So sometimes what happens, and I've seen this lots of times, when women are about to have their baby, they feel that burning sensation, and I have felt it really, really strongly. Even knowing everything that I know, I must be completely honest, it freaked me out, because I thought, oh my goodness, I can feel myself tearing. And I was very fortunate enough not to tear, actually. But it really felt like that's what was happening. And I'd done perineal massage, I know all about, and it's really normal to have that feeling, my goodness. But I think it would have been 10 times worse had I not done perineal massage and become familiar, because it's not a familiar sensation that burning that you feel and that real stretching, you know, it is concerning. And like I said, I did think to myself, I can physically feel myself being torn here. And what happens, and I've seen it lots of times, is women can then tense up. And that's the opposite of what you want to do during the delivery of your baby's head, is you really want to avoid that, because, of course, relaxation and tensing can't go together. And one of them needs to win that battle. And generally, tension wins over relaxation, because we can get tense a lot quicker than we can relax. So I think one of the main benefits to using that and doing perineal massage is familiarization and not freaking out that time and clinging onto your baby and holding tight and tensing, because that's not what you want to do. Once again, you want to go with your body, you want to deeply relax, you want to be deeply breathing, and doing everything that you can to accommodate your body.
It's nice to hear you being open and honest about that, Marie, because there's no denying birth, the sensations you feel are just up there with, you just can't describe it, really.
Powerful. I try and use the word powerful. That's nice. As much as possible.
I just want to be honest, and equally I don't want to scare people. And I guess let's talk about C-sections as well, because I think that's something that also gets a bad rap, whereas actually it can happen for a multitude of reasons, and it can also be a choice for people. I don't think there should be any judgment when it comes to birth. I don't even know where to start on that. What do you think about C-sections as a midwife?
Yeah, so we're very fortunate in this country to have access to such a life-saving procedure, because that's what it can absolutely be. And we can, you know, when we go into labour now, and this is what I thought as a midwife, when I have my baby, I have got access to care whereby my baby can be delivered within minutes if needed to be. So if we're concerned about lack of oxygen, something, you know, and a hypoxic brain injury, for example, if we're concerned, and this is, you know, the worst of the worst I'm talking, if we're concerned about that, then great, because I have access to such a fantastic procedure that can essentially save my baby's life and get my baby out really safely. And that's how I view cesarean section. I think they can be a real life saving procedure. And on the flip side to that as well, it's not just about the clinical indications or need for a C-section. If women have tocophobia, for example, with severe fear of childbirth, then a cesarean section can be a fantastic option to enable a woman who would not have had a baby had she had to labour and give birth. And that's the reality for some women. They are absolutely terrified. And no matter how much work you do, because I would really always encourage women with a fear that you know, that we talk about this fear, that we do as much education surrounding it as possible. So then hopefully we can combat that fear. But if that's not an option, then perhaps a cesarean section is the best option for women like that. So it's about looking at it from both angles as well. If that's something that you would really, really prefer, then that's fantastic, because it means that we are looking after your mental health, which is just as important as your physical and clinical well-being.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I had friends with breached babies and it enabled them to have a safe delivery. If you think about I always think back to the olden days. I'm a sucker for period dramas and things. And I think how many women, you know, died in childbirth and, you know, I probably wouldn't have made it through in the olden days without intervention. So we have to be kind. I think recovery time, though, is an aspect of C-sections that people often really worry about, don't they?
Yes, exactly. And there is a longer recovery period. Of course, it's still major surgery, so there is a longer recovery period. However, there are things that we can do. And this is why I explain to women that you should really have a plan A, B and C and find out about C-sections. Because if you are planning a home water birth and you end up having a cesarean section, it can be very scary. Not only can the procedure be scary because you didn't know what to expect or plan for, but the postnatal period then comes as a total shock. And that can go for any birth, actually. If you've planned one birth and you end up having, you know, you planned a home birth and you have a forceps birth, for example, then it's important that we understand about postnatal recovery time. So, yes, it can take longer and you have got a wound there. But the things that you can really do are, ideally, we want to prevent infection as much as possible, because that can delay your recovery period. And it's important to follow the guidelines of your local trust. So your obstetrician and your midwife will absolutely give you guidance on how to reduce the risk of infection and just make sure that your hygiene is as best as it possibly can be. And then eating and drinking, mobilization. And when it comes to both of those things, that can reduce constipation, which actually it sounds like, oh, it's just a bit of constipation. That can be a massive problem for women postnatally that have had a C-section, because generally they are less mobile and it can be really painful for women that do have severe constipation. So doing some really simple things like that, like understanding wound care, so that it's not so scary that you do have this wound that you need to look after, because you've got a newborn baby to care for too, but you need to, rather than then, like, you know, researching and finding out about, just understand a little bit about it. And then, as I say, mobilization, so getting you up as soon as possible, and just, even if you're just stretching your legs out or stretching your arms out and getting that blood flow around your body, because you are at more of an increased risk of a blood clot as well. And just eating and drinking, of course, diet is really, really important and a crucial part of your recovery as well. So there are some simple things that you can do to help enhance it. But overall, we won't escape the fact that it does have a longer recovery period.
Yeah, that was really coherently answered. Thank you. And I'll just stress again, fiber and water, guys. Fiber and water are your best friends post-birth. I mean, the anxiety about the first poo is big. and it can be very, very painful. And bowel movements, they do happen. You just need to eat and keep drinking, flush with the water.
Yes.
We do have lots of questions from our listeners for you, Maria. I'm going to try and pick out a few that I think that we haven't touched on in this episode. So Mila has said, is having a doula a good idea and a worthwhile investment?
Yes, absolutely, I would say. We know that continuous support during labour from someone that you know and trust actually reduces your chance of needing an emergency cesarean section. It can reduce the length of labour. It can reduce other interventions, reduce the need for pain relief. There are lots of known benefits when it comes to having a supportive birth partner. Now, when it comes to having a doula is someone, of course, that is specifically trained to care for women during their pregnancy, during labour and birth. So I had a doula personally, and I would really recommend if you can afford one. And perhaps if money is an issue, people hopefully will want to buy you things for afterbirth or perhaps, you know, towards the end of your pregnancy. And when people ask, what would you like? Don't be afraid of saying, actually, I've got a pot together because I'm planning on having a doula. So rather than buying presents, would you mind contributing to a service rather than a physical gift? But I would recommend them. They are fantastic.
It's a really, really, really good idea. This is a good one for you, Lucy, that's your Marie-Louise. Really, yeah. Lucy has said, I really want a home birth, but I'm scared I won't be able to go without an epidural. Any tips?
Yes. So first and foremost, you really need to do as much as you possibly can to understand what happens during labour and birth, because I think your fear of wanting an epidural comes from a place of the unknown. So really, diverge into what happens during labour. So what causes contractions? How might contractions feel? And understanding that this is all a normal part of labour, I think can really, really help you, because sometimes when you end up wanting an epidural, it's because you don't understand, okay, this is actually really normal. And always remember as well, if you do end up wanting an epidural, it doesn't matter. You can transfer in and have an epidural. You don't need to be scared of it. You don't need to be scared of absolutely anything. You just need to understand it and understand, prepare ahead of time as much as possible. Prepare your body, prepare your mind, do lots of education surrounding birth, have a good birth support partner. And then if you do need to have one, don't be scared of it. You can transfer in.
Lovely. Yeah, definitely. Cynthia has said, Cynthia, I'm going to jump in with this one as well. Great question. She said, I've heard that pelvic floor exercises are really important. How often should I be practicing these in the third trimester? All the time. Marie, what
absolutely.
Do you think?
Yeah, second that, I do. Yes, absolutely. It's really crucial. And lots of people, I think, are under the impression that we need to ignore the pelvic floor during pregnancy and we just focus on it postnatally. But absolutely not. During pregnancy, your body is under a lot of strain generally. And of course, the pelvic region is under particular strain from the weight of the growing baby, the amniotic fluid and the placenta. So it's really important that you do your pelvic floor exercises during pregnancy, because sometimes that can actually affect incontinence during pregnancy. So sometimes women will leak urine towards the end of their pregnancy. Now, we want to try to exercise those muscles as much as possible to avoid that. If it happens, it happens. But if we can prevent incontinence during pregnancy, that's really beneficial postnatally, because you've kind of got ahead of the game.
Yes, very, very, very true. Now, we're going to move on to our fact or fiction round, Marie. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Not bad on no sleep. Here we go. So once you have a cesarean, you can't give birth vaginally.
That's fiction.
Babies born in water birth can drown.
That is also fiction. But let me just explain a little bit more about that.
Yes, go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes babies can actually breathe in, so to speak, the water, aspirate the water. And that, of course, is not helpful for the lungs. So it's not necessarily that they will drown, but there is a possibility. It's very, very rare that that happens. And usually it's because the baby, the water is not the right temperature. The baby has been overstimulated. So they'll take that that initial breath too soon, so to speak. So they can't. And the other thing is the umbilical cord is still delivering oxygen rich blood to the baby. So therefore, the baby can't drown because the cord is still pulsating. But yeah, just a side note on that. I think that's where that comes from, the idea that they can drown, but it's not drowning. No, sometimes you can aspirate. And generally, the majority of babies, the vast majority of babies recover with no long term problems whatsoever.
Thank goodness. Average time established from labour to be fully dilated is 8 hours.
That is fiction. Absolute fiction.
Oh, what a laugh. You should give birth on your back.
Absolute fiction. You should give birth in the position that you feel most comfortable in. Being on your back isn't necessarily helpful, but if that's what you're most comfortable with, you're the birth boss.
There you go, birth boss. Having an epidural increases your chances of a cesarean.
That's fiction, according to NICE, anyway, but there will be some experts that will dispute that, but that is fiction, according to NICE.
Good answer. And big hips make for an easier birth.
Fiction. We used to x-ray women years ago and have a look at the pelvis and whatever else.
Really?
I say we did. This was not in my lifetime. But wow. Yes, it did happen to see, they would assess the how adequate the pelvis was. But we now know that there isn't actually any indication between those two, which is why we've completely moved away from x-raying women, which we shouldn't be doing in pregnancy anyway. But you might have a tiny little pelvis, but actually it's perfectly adequate for your size baby to fit through. You might have a particularly large pelvis, but perhaps the baby's not in a good position, and it doesn't necessarily mean that the baby will pass through the pelvis with ease.
Oh, so interesting. Right, you can't eat during labour.
This overall is fiction. However, if there is a very increased risk of you needing a cesarean section, some hospitals will advise that you are nil by mouth, as we call it, during labour. But overall, unless there's a real clinical indication, you should not be nil by mouth in labour. And this can actually lead to dehydration and exhaustion. So overall, it's fiction, but there are particular set of circumstances whereby women may be advised to be nil by mouth in labour. Sorry, a bit long-winded, but no, we have to cover all angles.
We do. We really do. Labour doesn't begin immediately after water breaks.
That's true. Yes, it can begin. Your waters can go, like what happened with you. Your waters can go, and you don't go into labour. Your waters perhaps might not go at all, and babies can be born in their waters, although that's very rare. Or your waters can go midway through labour. They can basically go any time. They kind of do their own thing.
There we go. Smaller babies make giving birth easier.
Fiction.
Yeah,
absolute not fiction.
Exactly. Yeah. Just wait for this one. Not all labours result in a euphoric feeling.
Yes, that is unfortunately that is true. Not all labours do result in that, and unfortunately, sometimes women do have traumatic or negative experiences. But sometimes it does. I mean, it did for me. So
there we go. Exactly. That was a lovely fact or fiction round and so informative. It does wrap up the episode, and it's a shame because I do feel like there's so much that we can discuss on this subject. Marie Louise, there's too much.
I didn't cover everything, but yeah.
Honestly, if people want to know more, I will mention that in a minute at the end of where they can go to read more. But we'll finish with our food for thoughts. I think to start, like all mums, I mean, I had hoped for the dream birth, and I want to tell people that it can happen, but also be open to changes, because the biggest, not mistake, but the biggest learning lesson I had was I need to be more open to things not quite going in the way that I'd hoped. You know, if you are open, but you have a plan, it's going to be much more bearable, and you'll be able to enjoy the experience of birth in a better way. But, you know, now I have Zachary, I, even though it was not great for me. I would do it all over again. So all of it, down to the things I worried about when I was pregnant, the tearing, the hemorrhoids, the pelvic girdle pain, all the things you can experience on the journey along the way. It's not that you forget, you deal with it. And what you have at the end is worth everything. And I find it really empowering to listen to positive and negative birthing stories, because I think no matter what, a baby comes into the world. And I truly hope that through my open and honest conversations and Marie today helping you, that the more informed we are, we could just support each other as women and be less judgmental, I think. But Marie, what would your food for thought be for our listeners today?
No, I totally agree with absolutely everything that you just said. But my food for thought is to explore all options always. So you can never go wrong with this one. You always have options, no matter what. So even if things don't go according to plan, you have options. That things aren't that black and white in maternity. We have policies, we have guidelines, we have tick boxes. Yes, we have all of those things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you and your family fit into those, and you still have options. So ask, what are the benefits of this? Ask, what else can you do for me? Ask about the research that's related to what you're being advised. And just say, is there anything else that I can do in my personal circumstances? Because we are all very unique individuals, and you always have options. And when you explore those options, it gives you an element of control in situations whereby you might feel out of control. So, for example, if you are giving birth and things aren't going according to plan and you need to be transferred in from your home birth, for example, making sure that you explore the options available to you gives you that element of control of, right, okay, well, at least I had control over that, and I was then able to do that because things veered off in a different direction. So I can't stress enough just asking questions and finding out what else can be done for you as a unique individual, not as somebody that fits into a policy or, as I said, a tick box system, and just making sure that you're very, very well educated.
Oh, Marie, you're so inspiring and so just full of wonderful information. Thank you for being a brand new mum coming on this podcast. Where can everybody go to find a bit more out about you, and if they need any guidance?
No, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you. And yes, I post very regularly. Most of it on Instagram has become about me and my baby. I apologize in advance. but you can find me on Instagram. I am The Modern Midwife. And I also have online antenatal courses that you can download in the comfort of your own home and watch them as and when you like. And I've included as much information as I possibly can in the courses.
Marie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, you'll absolutely love the others in this mini-series. So click subscribe and have them all downloaded in one go. If you have time to, please do leave a review so that we can reach higher highs in the charts. And the ultimate aim is to hopefully help more and more people. For more information about me or my clinic, Retrition, books, healthy recipes, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.